other than Roger Steffens Online. Roger, are you there?
I am indeed. How are you, Ralph Charles?
I'm doing splendid. And let me just turn this bob down.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Or as my mother used to say in Brooklyn back in the 50s when I played my Little Richard 78s really loud, turn off that so-and-so booga-wooga jungle music.
Oh, my God. Hey, Roger, but there is that connection. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you know.
Way back time.
Oh, yeah, man, because who was listening to that music but Bob and those guys down there?
Absolutely, and it made them what they were in later years.
Serious thing, man.
And I write about it in my new book at great length in an essay called The Romance of Record Collecting, which begins with the phrase, if you were born in 33, you'd be 45 and 78.
Wow.
And if you understand what those words mean, you're old.
You're old. Serious. Well, you know, I was just listening to that 1984 tape that you and Tim Hauser did. Was that KCR?
KCRW.
Yeah, and that brought back some memories, man.
Sure, because that was Bob's first network television appearance on Tim Hauser's Manhattan Transfer television show in the summer of 75.
Wow.
And if you have a copy of the Reggae Bloodlines book, that groundbreaking book that Stephen Davis and Peter Simon did, you'll see a picture of Don Taylor in his Cadillac convertible with the top down driving down Fairfax Avenue in Los Angeles to take them to tape the television show that day.
Wow. I have a copy of that Reggae Bloodlines.
Yeah, it really holds up. It's a darn good book.
So, Roger, can you just let the listeners in Binghamton know? Let me let them know. Roger Steffens is, I call him a reggae Mormon. But,
yes, yes, perfect. I'm always grabbing people by the collars and saying, hey, man, listen to this reggae. It's God's music.
But, Roger, you know, you deserve the respect because you have been doing it from that time to this time and at a time when you were doing it. There weren't a lot of people that were aware of the music, especially out on the West Coast, where you know you were bigging it up on the radio. And I think it should be known for listeners here and on the World Wide Web that Roger Steffens, no matter what anybody says, as far as I'm concerned, he gets my respect, and I love you, Roger.
Well, give thanks, my brother. We certainly share a lot in common, and it goes back to the doo-wop days, too, doesn't it?
Indeed. Definitely. I mean, those sounds, man, is what I grew up with. And I guess, Roger, that's why I'm kind of prejudiced towards singers.
Yes.
Today, you know?
Yes.
I'd rather hear the singing because of the melodies. And also, I would say it's not that I don't like rap. Now, I like the Last Poets and I like, say, the DJs from the 70s in Jamaica because of the, like a Big Youth, because of the melodic sound that was coming out of his rapping.
Right. They played along with the record. U-Roy was the pioneer in that. And, of course, the early people, Dillinger and Al Capone and all the other gangster-sounding rappers, you know, they related to the dub track that they were toasting over. They let part of the vocals come in, and they would answer it with their raps, and it was a song.
It really
was.
A
song. And I'm with you. I love melody. I love harmony. The trinity of words, sound, and power that reggae represents, I think, is the ultimate harmony, and that's why my tastes run very much to yours, too, my brother.
And then the other thing is the connector. Reggae is a connecting music worldwide. You know, it's
without question. I'm about to go to Israel.
Oh, boy.
I'm doing a two-week Bob Marley lecture tour of Israel beginning at the Tel Aviv Museum on the 12th of January. Gil Bonstein, the great reggae promoter over there, has set up a two-week tour for us, and we're going to go all over the country and preach the Marley gospel.
Well, I understand that reggae is pretty big over there. They do have sound systems, no
doubt. Yes, and Mata Shahu has just finished a very successful tour there.
Right. And he's been to Binghamton University, you know.
What do you think?
Well, you know, I kind of... considered kind of a novelty kind of thing, even though and then here's the other thing, Roger. It's hard to know whether somebody really feels it, like, say, Sinead O'Connor, or whether it's just a gimmick.
Well, I'll tell you, if you've seen the new Beat magazine with Sinead and Burning Spear on the cover with my cover interview in it, you'll have no doubts about her sincerity. She's been into the music since she was 3 years of age. Literally. And when she was 17, she left Ireland, moved to Brixton, and she saw Althea and Donna on Top of the Pops, and she wanted to be Althea. she made this, I think it's the reggae album of the year, quite frankly, the Throw Down Your Arms collection. It's 12 of the deepest Naya Bingi songs. I mean, my God, she's covering Junior Biles and the Abyssinians, as well as five great Spear songs. And she's got some of the strongest musicians in the history of Jamaican recording studios, Sly and Robbie to begin with, and Nambo, and Dalton Brownie, and Lenky, and Sticky Thompson, and it's just, it's an album that I've been playing now for 3 months over and over again, and I never get tired of it. It's classic reggae, sung beautifully, and so straightforward that you understand every one of those words, and it really recasts those songs in a modern light, and I think it's just a fantastic accomplishment on her part, and quite unexpected. I can't really call myself a fan in the past, but I had an hour-long conversation with her, and I said, what are you listening to in your house these days? And she says, oh, we don't listen to anything but Naya Bingi in my house. My children wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, you know, I tell you, I really feel it with her, and I feel positive about her and what she's doing and what she's accomplishing. And Carter Van Pelt told me he saw the show, maybe it was a week or 2 weeks ago, and he said in New York City, Spear got up on stage and played background percussion.
Yeah, and they had a wonderful review of it with a picture, in fact, in the New York Times, I think, on Monday morning, and got a rave review. And everybody I know who has seen the tour so far in Boston and New York and Washington has come away just raving about it.
Well,
we saw her. Mary and I went to the taping of the Jay Leno show in October when she previewed the album there, and met her backstage afterwards. And we were just knocked out by the performance that night with Sly and Robbie.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really first-rate stuff. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it, why no female singer in the history of Jamaican music has ever attempted an album like that?
Well, you know what, Roger? I was trying to think about that, and I said maybe it's the relationship between the man and woman in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see any other reason, because if you look at it, you say they've been exposed to all of that music.
Yeah.
And so why hasn't a woman from Jamaica done something like that?
Yeah, in my interview with Burning Spear, we do a little sidebar about it, and he says, you know, nobody ever covers my music. She's the first one.
Serious.
How come nobody in my own home has never covered my stuff?
Serious, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I urge all your listeners who have not checked out Throw Down Your Arms by Sinead O'Connor to do so, because it's one of the most truly satisfying albums in a long, long time. How many albums, honestly, Ross Charles, have you heard in the past year that you can sit and listen to every track on?
It's true. It's true. It's like anticipation. It's like, okay, now what's this one going to be? Oh, come on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sinead.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Get it over with and let's see if the next one's worth it.
Oh, I have the remixes too, you know.
Mm. Oh, the ones from France?
Yeah, man.
The dubs. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a great album too.
Yeah, man. And so, you know, I've been playing it and actually have it with me today. You know,
mm-hmm.
I figured we were going to touch on her, because at first, when the album first came out, there was sort of a controversy, you know.
Oh, there still is. If you go up on the internet, there is such a range of hatred toward her that I find utterly irrational.
It really is. You know, it's like, what do people want? You know, they got to complain about something, and I hate to say it, but it seems like they're out there all on the West Coast, Roger, with you.
Oh, we got some nutcases around here, that's for sure.
I'm not going to mention any boards, but some of those boards. But, you know, I wanted to ask you something about a penny reel. because I was reading something on one of the sites, and it seemed like this guy got into something with you.
Kind of wrote a satirical thing about the discography. We should explain, first of all, that my latest book, which I've been working on for 15 years with Leroy Jody Pearson, has just come out from Rounder Press. It's called Bob Marley and the Wailers, The Definitive Discography. And Penny posted something on the Blood and Fire chat board on the internet and was kind of making fun of us and denigrating our efforts without ever having seen a copy of the book. So I wrote back and I said, listen, if I send you the book, will you review it? And he said, sure. And it turned out to be this incredible rave review from the man who tried to do the very first discography of the Wailers back in, I think, 1984.
Wow.
And so it was, you know, it was very nice of him to be so positive about the project. And so far, we've had 9 reviews on Amazon.com, where it's selling for an incredibly ridiculously low price. And each of those reviews is a full 5-star review. So it's kind of humbling and satisfying at the same time to see people reacting so positively to what is essentially my life's work. Leroy and I have spent literally 15 years of our life assembling this book.
Wow, wow. Well, I know you've been doing enough work, 15 years, but you've been working long, long. When did you first start here? Jamaican music, reggae.
In the summer of 73, when I read this extraordinary article by Michael Thomas, a gonzo journalist from Australia, who wrote an article in Stone called The Wild Side of Paradise that later became a book called Babylon on a Thin Wire, and the reissue was called Ja Revenge. But he said, reggae music crawls into your bloodstream like some vampire amoeba from the psychic rapids of Upper Niger consciousness. And I said, man, I don't know what the hell that means, but I got to go out right now and find it. So I went down downtown Berkeley where I was living, and I found a used copy of Catch a Fire, the original, you know, the Zippo lighter cover.
Right.
For $2.25, I figured I could take a chance. And, man, my whole life changed forever from that moment.
Wow, wow.
So it's I'm in my 33rd year of devotion to Ja music.
Well, 2 years after you, man, 1975, a woman, I'll never forget, I have to say her name, Tilda Jones, and a white woman, and this woman was, she was unique because she had a 7-year-old son, and I had a 7-month-old daughter, and when I met her, and she was the only woman that was a merchant seaman in New York, plus a model, which was pretty,
Wow.
Tilda Jones, and she lived in the same building with, what's his name? One of the last poets.
Wasn't Umar, was it?
No. The Latin. Was Felipe Luciano's brother. Mm-hmm. She lived in the same building, and the thing is that she had a copy of Natty Dread. You know.
Oh boy.
And I looked at it and I said, "Who is this?" She said, "You never heard of Bob Marley?"
And what a great album to start with!
Hey,
I mean, that's
man.
One of his best works ever.
And that was it from that time. That was it, man.
You know. And for the younger people in your audience, you know, 1974, the accountants and the lawyers had completely taken over the music business and emasculated all that great 60s consciousness and turned it into glam rock and disco and this dreadful kind of crap. And to hear Bob Marley in one of his rawest and most naked performances and singing, "I feel like bombing a church now that I know the preacher is lying." I mean, that was a transformative album for so many people. Huh?
Serious, man. It's, you know, so many people tell me when they're feeling down and out, they go and listen to Bob.
Well, you know, I've been lecturing all over the world for 21 years on the life of Bob Marley, and it's interesting because I'd say, on an average, 1 out of every 2 shows, someone will come up afterwards to me and say, "I know you're not going to think I'm crazy, but I got to tell you this, Bob Marley's music saved my life." And they mean it. They mean it literally. And I don't think they say that about, Madonna or New Kids on the Block.
Not really.
No. See, Bob Marley's music means something. It stands for something. And it's a higher consciousness, and it's a call to greatness. And we need that now more than ever before. He is truly the artist of the 20th century, the one person from that century whose work is going to last as long as anyone else's. I'm convinced of that.
Well, I was looking at Santa Barbara 1979 last night. I got a DVD, and yeah. It's just amazing, Roger. Just the vibes you get just from, you can go back and look at that and think about it and say, man, this guy was ahead of his time.
Yeah, but that gives me the creeps watching that film.
Really?
I spent 2 weeks traveling with him during that period, and he was so sick and so weak. And yet he would, he'd be barely able to talk on the bus, but he'd get off and he'd do a show like that one in Santa Barbara, which had, 23-24 songs on it.
Yeah.
But if you see it, he's not dancing much. He can barely hold the guitar. The film from that year that deserves to come out and has been in the can for 26 years, and you've seen excerpts from it when you've seen my show, is the Harvard Stadium Amapola concert.
Yes, yes.
Well, some good news there. We recently found a different copy of the board mix, so they were able to put together a three-camera mix of that show, and I brought it to the people who run Universal Records out here in L.A., and they basically said, well, why hasn't this been out for years already? And I said, well, I think you know the reason, but they are in serious negotiations now after 26 years to release the Harvard Stadium concert. That was the one that Dick Gregory was the MC on, and Olatunji plays on Exodus with Bob during the show, and he does an 11-minute version of Wake Up and Live, during which he makes these incredible speeches and dances around the stage with his arms around the I-3. It's the only thing I can compare it to is the climax of One Love or the Smile Jamaica concert, which also has never been released, in terms of the frenzy and the commitment of his performance. So maybe at last, in the new year, we will finally have the Harvard Stadium concert available to the public.
Wow, and you've always said that Chris Blackwell had a lot of stuff that was still unreleased.
Oh, you have no idea.
Wow.
Now, when I say unreleased, I'm talking not only about songs we've never heard, but also about alternates. And Bob was constantly experimenting with the sound of his songs, much in the way that Bob Dylan still does.
Right.
And, so there's slow versions, there's fast versions, there's different lyrics, there's an incredible alternate version of Rat Race with a couple of different verses where he sings some a chicken, some a scratch, some a bun, some a batch. And another one where he says some a donkey, some an ass, with very different arrangements behind it.
Wow.
And, so all of the Island period, there are dozens and dozens of different versions of almost every song he recorded.
Man, we need more people like you, Roger.
Well, I wish I had a record company to put them out. That's what I need.
No, I mean, because, it's like Bob's spirit will never diminish, man. And then when we have people that keep the spirit alive, that's how strong it's going to stay. And I can just see it just going infinity, it's just like on and on and on, because the message was so positive.
Yeah.
And, but let me ask you something about the Bob, also Bunny and Peter, because I look at it as the three of them as the Trinity.
Of course.
And integral parts. And, if you pull them apart, it took something away, because you know how those voices sounded together.
Oh, their harmonies were unique and ethereal. And, I can never get enough of the original Wailers. And, of course, in our new book, The Definitive Discography, we list every single song that the Wailers ever made, released and unreleased, and all the songs songs that they sang on behind other people like Jackie Opal or Delroy Wilson.
Wow.
And we use the matrix of the academic university discographies for people like Duke Ellington and John Coltrane and Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And Leroy and I have felt very strongly all these years that the Wailers deserve absolutely the same respect that the giants of jazz and other forms of music have been given. And so we list the date of each recording session, the names of the singers, the names of all the players and what instruments they played, the engineer,
wow,
the studio, the number of tracks on the master tape, the producer, and then perhaps most important, especially to collectors, the matrix number scratched in the wax of the records, because there were so many blanks that if you don't know the matrix number, it's hard to know exactly what you have on that disc. And then there's an awful lot of anecdotal information especially with the early tracks, because Leroy and I spent 17 days in 1990 in a hotel room with Bunny Wailer playing all these songs for him and getting the full story. And it's a shame, because that was our initial work on his autobiography.
I remember.
Yeah, and he has since abandoned that book. So a lot of the material that would have ended up in Bunny's book is actually in this book now.
Oh, okay.
So one of the reviewers, in fact, said that this discography reads like a novel. You follow all the twists and turns and disappointments and experiments and dead ends and breakthroughs just by reading the anecdotal notes to each of them. And there are hundreds and hundreds of pictures. There's all the album and picture sleeve covers in there. And then in the center of the book is a 12-page full-color spread of 288 labels, beginning with Judge Knot, and all the different labels that Bunny, Bob, and Peter used throughout their entire careers. So it's a real feast for the eyes, and it's going to start a lot of conversations. MySpace.com has set up a site for people to make emendations to the book and keep the discussion going, because there's no way it can truly be definitive and 100% accurate. You're dealing with stuff from more than 40 years ago in some cases, and people's memories. There were no real written records made in Jamaica about these sessions. So where there were places we heard one drummer on a record and three different people swore to us they were that drummer, we put their names in the notes and let history decide.
Now, do you remember our great friend, our great drummer friend, the late Winston Grennan?
Winston Grennan, yeah.
Was his name on any of those things? Because
he's in the book, of course, but in some of those cases, we were told in no uncertain terms by Bunny Wailer that the drummer on those sessions was Hugh Malcolm, the man that Bunny and others have told us invented the one drop.
Right.
But, you know, Winston also told us that he was the drummer on a lot of those tracks. So in each of those cases, we make note of that fact. I mean, I wasn't in the studio that day. You weren't there.
Right.
You know, I can't swear one way or the other. We'll try to let the historians puzzle that one out.
Well, when you talk to musicians, you're going to hear different stories and different versions.
I did have some problems with Winston. Years ago at a Raw conference in North Carolina, I did about a 3.5-hour interview with him, and he told me that he had made an entire album on the 20th of April, 1966, the night before Selassie landed in Jamaica, and that the producer of that album that night was Mortimer Planner. Well, Bob was in the States at that time.
Right.
And Mortimer Planner was out at the airport with 100,000 other Rastas. He wasn't going to be sitting all night, hours before Selassie landed, sitting in a studio recording an album. So, you know, it makes me
question
a little leery about certain claims when you hear things like that. But he was a wonderful guy, and everything he really did was so important that we can never forget the contributions of Winston Grennan.
A great drummer, too.
Brilliant drummer.
Yes. You know, when you have these jazz musicians, and, you know, just remember the six-hour interview? I think I sent you a copy of that, if I can remember.
With whom?
With Winston.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
1997. I think you
brilliant interview.
Yeah, man. He's something else, man.
Yeah.
But now, getting back to you, What do you think, where do you think the music is going today, Roger? And do you think it's coming, because, you know, it's gone through a period with the negative lyrics and stuff. Where do you think it is at this point right now?
Confused.
That's a good word.
Yeah. There is a slight roots revival going on.
Mm-hmm.
Artists, the deaf artists and the anti-gay artists are finding it difficult to find live work because of their lyrics, and I think they're somewhat chastened now.
Mm-hmm.
I look to people like Taurus Riley to carry the root vibe forward. Do you have his album?
No, man.
It's Jimmy's Son.
It's Jimmy's Son,
and
I know.
It's one of the debuts of the year. It's an album called Challenges, and it's another one of those totally satisfying records. Every cut is great. He's got a full live band with horns. His writing is terrific. He sounds a lot like his daddy. And I just love that record. So it's nice to see some of the Roots people coming along and getting some attention. But as for the direction of reggae these days, I just don't know. Its share of sales in the States is lower than it's ever been before. You get the few isolated instances of Damien debuting at number 7 and then dropping precipitously way down the charts the next week. And
mm-hmm.
Shaggy, the same thing. What do you think of the Grammy nominees this year?
Well, I ain't going to tell you. I don't want to offend anybody. But
okay, I hear you, man.
we'll just say, I will say this about Damien, is that I like what he's trying to do. And, Damien, people will criticize and say, if you cross something, that means you've left from the other side. But I think he has a way of connecting with people. And I think that's the key thing. That's the most important thing. And I think maybe his father might be smiling at him.
I think so, too. I mean, when I really got the album was when I got a big magnifying glass out and read the lyrics as I listened to the album.
Mm-hmm.
In that little 2-point type that nobody can read.
Right.
And when I read the lyrics, I said, man, this kid is really saying something.
He's definitely saying something.
And he's a shoo-in for the Grammy.
Oh, yeah.
There's an artist with the name Marley, they're an automatic winner.
Okay, then you said it. You said some positive things, because that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that, you know, if I
no
had
contest.
A,
it's
a,
over.
Yeah, if I had a favorite, I would say, look at it. Look at it. Analyze it like this. Look, here's this youth who's following in the footsteps in a very positive, constructive way, and he's creative. And, man, the lyrics are there. It's not that he's jumped into any kind of hip-hop beat and is negative. I mean, he's incorporating stuff and he's bringing it forward. He's making Black Americans look at it more. He's making the world look at it more.
Right.
But specifically Black Americans say, yeah, we are connected. We are, because, you know, I tell you, I don't know if I tell you this, when I looked at the Marquee of the Apollo in 1979 when Bob was there and this guy coming underneath this a black gentleman that was he was selling things, he turns around and looks at the Marquee and says, who the hell is Bob Marley? You know, so Damien changes that now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know who Damien Marley is.
Yeah. And in the new issue of The Beat we were talking about with Spear and Sinead on the cover, Stephen Davis has a review of their two albums, Sinead and Damien, and he says Damien's album is the best album by any of Bob Marley's children ever.
Ah, because it reaches out all the way. It touches so many.
Yeah, and Jamrock, I mean, that was an unprecedented hit all summer long, all in so many countries.
Oh, man. I said, man, are these politicians in Jamaica listening to his lyrics? Everywhere. Politicians everywhere should listen to the lyrics, you know?
Yeah, politicians.
Yeah.
We need a new Tosh. That's what we really need.
That's
a fire and brimstone breathing prophet.
I was going to ask you about him. Now, would you say this about Peter, that if he didn't spend the time with the one-upsmanship with Bob, he could have gone so much further.
Well, he embittered a lot of people when Bob died by making so many anti-Bob remarks in interviews. I remember I did a television show with him a couple of months after Bob passed, and at the end of it I said, is there something you'd like to say that we haven't covered yet? And he said, yes. Them say I am the new king of reggae, and that's not true.
Oh, my
There's
God.
There's nothing new about me.
So I've always been the kid.
he crowned himself, you know. But you gotta love Peter for that, you know.
Yeah, man, for being able to enunciate things, and he'd have his way of taking words and changing.
Oh, he was the best. I mean, when I put the book together for the honorary citizen box set on Columbia, I made sure there was a whole page called "Words of the Herbalist Verbalist," you know, where he would call the judge the grudge, and his manager was his damager, and his producer was the reducer. And there was one phrase I came across that, too late to put in the book, but it would have gone in there instantly if I had heard it before. He referred to the Queen of England as Queen Erliza Bitch.
Oh my God, he was too much.
He was too much, man. He really was.
You know,
and it wasn't organized religion to Peter, it was agonized religion.
Oh my God.
Hits the nail on the head, doesn't it?
It certainly
does.
Oh,
and you know what he called Islam?
What?
Is sheep.
Oh my! We better be cool, Roger.
Well, I'm just stating the historic.
No. I know. I don't have a problem. I'm laughing at that, man.
Yeah.
Is she? Oh man! Now, the one who everyone thought, and this is what I read in that article, the one who everyone thought was the quiet one. Was Bunny is the one who used to go to these producers and raise havoc.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm reading about, and Bunny is a trip, you know, and I don't know, man. Sometimes I just wonder, he needed to tour more than he had done, or play more, you know.
Yeah, it's really sad to see how he's ended up.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
there's an awful lot of lost promise there.
Yeah, man. You know, it's like, what happened to Bunny, you know? And
I don't think we can talk about it on the air.
No, we can't.
But it's sad.
Well, we will talk. We will talk. Yeah, man. So you have to give me that connection so I can get the book, Roger.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll make sure. I'll call the company. I thought you had had it already.
No.
You'll have it by the end of the week, and then you can talk about it on the air yourself.
Right.
There's essays on the lives of Bunny, Bob, and Peter. There's lots of pictures from Kate Simon that have never been published before from the early Coxon days. There's a whole lot of pictures I've been saving up all these years to run Mortimer Planner and Tartar and Vision and people, Lee Perry and the ruins of the Black Ark, and Chris Blackwell in the back room of my archives holding Judge Knot and One Cup of Coffee on the Island label when he put them out in 63. And that's opposite a picture of a poster that Peter Tosh helped design for his record, Hammer Them Down, Hammer Them Dung.
Yeah,
the cartoon of him nailing a stake through the vampire of capitalism lying in a coffin.
Oh, Lord, we want to see that, man.
Yeah, man, you'll love that.
Well, and you and your family are in good health?
We are, thank you. We're doing very well and looking forward to a very busy 2006. The Life of Bob Marley tour begins in Israel for 2 weeks in January and then 2 weeks in Hawaii in February. We're going down to Washington and Baltimore at the beginning of March. In April, I'm playing 12 shows on 2 weekends at the Houston Reggae Festival. So there's a lot of activity out there for a reggae Mormon. You know, that phrase was first used officially by the French newspaper in Montreal, is it the Gazette?
Montreal.
Well, whatever the main newspaper is up there, called me Le Mormon du Reggae.
There he is, Roger Steffens. Check him out. And Sister Irie told me to hear you up, and she's sorry she hasn't been in touch with you, but she's going to get in touch with you soon.
Oh, she's the best, man. We need a dozen more people like her.
Oh, man, indeed.
Such a great person.
She really is.
Down in Austin, Texas, a disc jockey and writer and firm supporter and constant visitor down to Yard, so she really knows what she's talking about, and she's got a lovely spirit. She represents the best of the people we want in reggae.
Well, she's now got a new job with the American Cancer Society.
Yeah,
so,
she's a humanitarian.
Yeah, man. And, you know, it's like, like you said, we need more people like her, man. And, you know, this Katrina stuff and people, you know, it's not just the music. It's people reaching out. And I think that's the important thing that we need to do more of, right?
Yeah, not just singing the message, but living the message.
Yes, indeed.
And this is message music, and what you're doing is so important. How many years now have you been on the air?
Going on 16 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Sweet 16. How about that? I hope people are generous in their support of the station when the time comes around.
Well, I hope so, too, man. Well, you know what, Roger? What I really intend to do is I was talking to Asha, and I would like to do reach out even further. And, you know, the satellite radio, internet radio is big now. And I think this message is a universal message, and I want to keep spreading it and learning more, that, you know, and sharing with positive people. You know, in all these years, Roger, people such as yourself and countless musicians that I've met, you know, I feel it's a privilege for me to be here doing the radio. You know, I've been partly a performer too, you know, with Ross Tesfer, who stayed with you for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the late Keith Hudson, who I think I didn't realize how much of a great producer he was at the time that I was with him. You know,
he turned into one of the most collectible artists in all of reggae music. His records now go for hundreds of dollars.
Keith Hudson's?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Big bad boy.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, well, I got some singles, man. I may need to think about that.
You want some Christmas money. Get up there on eBay right now. You'll make a small fortune. I'll tell you.
Well, listen, Roger, it's been a pleasure, and you know you're going to get a copy of this.
Oh, thank you. Put it in the archives.
And I'll be hearing about this on the web. And, you know, somebody's trying to call while I'm on the air. And I hope everything is alive out there where everybody can hear. There's no problems. But, you know, it was a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a joy to talk to you, Ross Charles. And you guys keep warm now.
Oh, indeed. Oh, man, I'm jealous of you, Roger.
Yeah, well, sunny Southern California, I'll tell you. It's a long way from Brooklyn.
Oh, I hear you, my brother.
So, well, have a great new year, and jaw love to all your listeners and to everyone who is out there in the reggae world. My love and respect, and here's to a much better year for all of us next year.
Give thanks, Roger. And we're going back into Bob Marley at the Apollo.
Irie, one love.
Every time.